This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
From WDET in Detroit, this is Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson. So much of the American dream is wrapped up in the idea of home ownership. And generally, that has two meanings. One is the stability that comes with ownership, and the other is the investment, which is a real key to building intergenerational wealth. But in Detroit, we've had real struggles maintaining that dream and building on it. Now, this city was once home to the largest number of single-family homeowners, but it briefly became a city of majority renters in the last decade. And the city's majority black population has struggled to enjoy the benefits of homeownership because of low property values and redlining and a number of other issues. So that has all given rise to a lot of alternative efforts to make home ownership accessible. And one of those efforts is something called a land contract. Now, these are individual agreements between home buyers and sellers that don't involve banks or mortgages. The plus side is that people who don't have lots of cash for a down payment or the credit score to get a mortgage can still be on the path to owning their own homes. But a new report on housing in the city shows that too often these land contracts go bad and the buyers wind up on the losing end. I'm in the studio with the show's producer, Carrie Jr. II, and today we're going to talk about what's going on with land contracts and home ownership in the city of Detroit.
Hey, Stephen. Good morning. I should start there.
Yes. Good to have you here.
So... Home ownership, land contracts. I often always thought that that was mortgages and then it was rent to own, that those were like the only processes by which you can own a home. These land contracts are something different that I hadn't thought about.
Land contracts are a little like rent to own. Mm-hmm. The idea is that you pay over time, right. Essentially a rent to the owner of the home, but a portion of that goes toward your eventual purchase of the home. There are all kinds of different terms that can be set up in these contracts, mm-hmm. To determine how much of that money goes toward buying, what the rules are in terms of if you miss a payment or something like that. But it is kind of like, I think that's the best way to think of it, is that it's a rent-to-own model. The problem, though, right. is that the seller often has way too much power in the relationship.
I see. It seems like in this one, there's more vulnerability for those buyers, renters, in this scenario, for them, for things to go wrong. And it often seems like the homes don't ultimately become, they aren't ultimately owned by these renters.
Yeah, the yeah. renters end up not being able to purchase. And this new report talks right. about how frequently that's happening in Detroit.
Yeah, the new report, it's so they evaluated these land contracts from 2008 to 2015, and they being our guest today, who is Joshua Akers. He's a research manager at the Mid-America Research Council, and he's a co-author also with Eric Seymour. So they both looked at 2008-2015 to see what these land contracts look like and what the outcomes were, and that the outcomes disproportionately occurred in black neighborhoods in Detroit, and that disproportionately low-income homes or low-income households weren't able to actually achieve home ownership. That's, I assume, is, you know, the goal for anyone who's trying to rent. So yeah. that I feel like on top of the history you just laid out kind of sets an interesting, I guess, more prevalent and clearer understanding of what practices were going on in the city mm-hmm. that allowed folks to get behind in yeah. terms of home ownership here.
And remember, we're talking here about a population that is already struggling with right. poverty and limited access to things like, you know, conventional mortgages. They get into these land contracts thinking that this is a way to get ahead.
Right.
And then because of the circumstances or because of the power that the the sellers wield, and some of them wield it, I think, in ways that are predatory, they end up with nothing or even less than what they started with.
Especially when you, the idea of being a homeowner is such a high goal. It's such a, it's a universal goal for everyone. So when you get into this thing, I imagine you're so hopeful and inspired and excited about being able to eventually be able to have a place to call your own.
Yeah.
And so I imagine that allows those people to be a little bit more susceptible. So I know the time stops that we're in 2015. I'm curious, not that I know if Acres knows more about what happens past that period, but if there's something that we can learn about what's been happening in the meantime across that period. So yeah. I know I'm not the expert on this, so let's go ahead and get to him.
Yeah,
I'll stop talking.
Really great guest coming up in Joshua Acres. Also, want to hear from you, our listeners, during today's show. You can call us at 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and either at WDET or hashtag created equal and be part of the program that way. Joshua Acres, welcome to Created Equal.
Oh, good morning, Stephen. Thank you very much. Yeah, happy to be here.
It's great to have you here. So let's start with what you found in the report that you did on the outcomes of land contracts in Detroit between 2008 and 2015. I think the expectation would be that at least most of these contracts would result in an actual home sale. The data suggests that didn't come true.
That's right. I mean, you know, there are some land contracts between individuals that we saw have success, but you know, with larger contract sellers, so people that buy in bulk and use this as a business model, of the major companies we looked at, one had a 5% success rate. The vast majority of them were much lower than that. One local land contract seller had a 0.5% success rate on those contracts.
And so let's talk about what's going on here. As I said in the open, the idea of a land contract seems like a viable alternative to the mortgage process, which has really been kind of confounding here in Detroit for a really long time. Banks are wary of the market here in Detroit in the sense that it's difficult to determine how much a house is really worth and how much you might want to lend against the value of that house. But also the credit worthiness of Detroiters is something that banks have not seen as great value. And there's a lot of that's very controversial as to why. But the result is that there are very few mortgages that generally are issued in the city, and so land contracts were another way to get more people to be owners. What's going wrong that prevents that from happening?
Well, I think part of it is the period in time, both in which we're looking at here in the study, and as Carrie had mentioned earlier, what continues on even today. If we think back, for those of us that are old enough, to 2008, right, those were very trying times, not only across the country, but particularly in the city of Detroit. You had a large number of Black families that ended up in subprime mortgages in the early 2000s. You had huge numbers of foreclosures throughout the city and throughout Southeast Michigan. You had a large reorganization of the automakers and closure of tool and die manufacturers. So you have an economy in upheaval. On top of that, one of the responses to the mortgage crisis at the federal level was to tighten credit restrictions, right? So it gets really difficult for a lot of people in need of housing who may have lost their housing during that period in time or may need credit to get access. At the same time, it created a huge volume of properties being sold at deep discounts. Mm-hmm. And a lot of businesses arose out of that across the country, particularly these contract sellers. And what they did is target bulk properties being offered by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac trying to get foreclosures off their books, or bulk properties being offered by Wayne County and the Wayne County Treasurer for tax foreclosure. And then they would turn around and kind of triage these properties. The properties they could sell or flip immediately, they would. And others, they turned to this land contract business model. And the idea was that you could get people into these properties quite quickly, not pay taxes or do any improvements on them, and cash out as fast as you could.
And so what happens when this happens, when this goes wrong and buyers don't end up with the home?
So, yeah, for the buyers, you know, it's kind of the worst case scenario. You take your savings that you have and maybe you borrow from some friends and you put together the relatively large down payment. That's often 3 to 10 times what the investor paid for the property, just right there. On top of that, you end up in a home that needs all kinds of repairs. You may not have a hot water heater. You may have a leaking sewer. You may not have electrical wiring. Right. But that belief that it's going to be your home, you know, encourages you to keep putting money into it. So you make a pretty big financial investment out of limited means. At the same time, as soon as you miss a payment or any component of that, those contracts often turn you into month-to-month renters, and the owner will file for eviction. So for the contract buyer, right, they've lost a huge amount of a limited amount of capital that they had. On the other hand, you know, for the city and for the county, what you see is often these contract sellers are not paying taxes. They're not taking care of distressed properties. And if the contract buyer can't keep up, they end up back within, you know, within the public public holdings and oftentimes demolished.
So let's talk about these contracts that that are made between the sellers and the buyers. A little later, I want to talk about the ways in which sellers use information about buyers to take advantage of them. But in general, let's talk about what these contracts look like. So you want to sell me your house, we sign a land contract. I'm agreed to pay you a monthly fee for living in the house. What are the other kinds of terms that might be common in these land contracts?
Sure. So if we start with kind of, I mean, land contracts are incredibly malleable, so we can put all kinds of terms in them. But, you know, if we're both well-intentioned buyer and seller, I might know where you're at income-wise. I might know the timing that I need to, you know, receive the money back, and we'll negotiate all those terms. So maybe it's 6 years, you know, you're paying $500 or $800 a month. And at the end of that, you're like, hey, I'll have $25,000 as well. So you're saving money on the side. And you pay that off in the title transfers, and it's all good. In these situations, oftentimes what we're talking about is very asymmetrical kind of relationship with knowledge. Right? So buyer may have purchased the house for $500 or a little more out of tax foreclosure. And they turn around and they'll say, okay, so it's $5,600 down. Your payment will be $500 a month over 7 to 10 years, depending on what it is. In addition, you're responsible for taxes, but we'll pay them for you. So if you can add another $160 to that payment, we'll go ahead and take care of your taxes, which often doesn't happen. It just taken as an extra piece. The state of Michigan caps the interest rate you can charge at 11%. So we're going to put it right there at 10, 10 and a half, 11% interest rate. For you, and you're going to have a balloon payment at the end of that contract,
right?
That you've got to get there,
right? And that balloon payment generally is about me eventually acquiring a mortgage. I mean, it's that I might later be able to go to a bank and say, well, you know, I want to buy this house, and the conditions for them giving me that loan are better than they are today. Is that right?
That would be the ideal. Yes.
Yeah. And is it that the buyers are not getting to that stage at all? Or is it that they're getting to that stage and they're still not capital available through the conventional mortgage process?
Generally not getting to that stage.
They're not getting there. Not getting there because the terms of the land contract are just they can't meet them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And these contracts are designed to fail.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Joshua Akers about land contracts in the city of Detroit and the effect they're having on home ownership as well as the housing market more generally. We want to hear from you, the listeners, as well. Give us a call and let us know if you've been involved in a land contract in Detroit. What was the outcome of that land contract? Did you find it to be an easier way to buy a house than going to a bank and getting a mortgage? Flip side of that, are you someone who was involved in a land contract and feel like maybe you got taken a bit, that you didn't end up with the house and that you lost some of the capital that you invested in the property? We want to hear about all of those stories. Also give us a call and let us know what you think the city should be doing to make home ownership easier for people. That's a huge problem in the city of Detroit. What kinds of things could we come up with that would get more people into homes that they own? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, either at WDET or hashtag Created Equal, and we can include you that way. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Created Equal on WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you're with us. Our guest today is Josh Akers. He is a research manager at Mid-America Regional Council. He's the co-author of a report titled Judged by Their Deeds, Outcomes for Properties Acquired by Contract Sellers Following the Foreclosure Crisis in Detroit. That report is about land contracts, an individual agreement between a seller and the buyer of a home that kind of gets around the mortgage process, which has confounded us here in Detroit in terms of trying to get people into homes that they own. The report looked at land contracts between 2008 and 2015 and found that an astonishing number of them did not result in the buyer ultimately acquiring the home. We're talking about why that's true, and the effect that land contracts are having on the housing market as well as affordable housing in the city. Also want to get to the idea of what some solutions are to these problems. We want to hear from you as well. Give us a call and let us know if you have experience with this process. Are you someone who owns a home and has tried to sell it through a land contract? Are you someone who's tried to buy a home through a land contract? Tell us how that went, what problems arose, and what the outcome was of that contract. Also, give us a sense of what you might change in the process as well. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and at WDET or hashtag Created Equal, and we can include you that way. We've got a number of folks who work in housing advocacy here in the city who are calling in, and I want to start today with two of them. Michelle Oberholzer, you are up first. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, good morning, Stephen.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you.
I have so many thoughts to share. I hope I can get a few out in the time allotted. But sure. Josh Akers, I agree with everything you said, and I can't wait to read the report. You know, we do see a lot of intentionally malicious land contracts that are designed to fail, especially as a way to sidestep the city rental ordinance. You know, it's a convenient way for owners to essentially rent without having to try to comply. It's not a new issue, though. If you are familiar with, you know, Ossian Sweet or Ocean Sweet, however you pronounce his name, that was a predatory land contract, you know, all back in the day. So two other quick thoughts. I wanted to share that the City of Detroit with U of M Poverty Solutions and Enterprise Community Partners did create a website. It's called DetroitLandContractHelp.com. Mm-hmm. That's a digital resource. It has information for every stage before you sign. You know, the burden of the research is really on the buyer. So how to navigate to find out if the owner is really the owner and things like that. And then there's also printed resources in English and Spanish at a number of community nonprofits. But one last thing before I end the comments is we have identified that one problem of many, but one problem that leads to these land contracts being weaker than they might otherwise be is the fact that you can't record a land contract with the Wayne County Register of Deeds unless you have no tax debt. So whereas if you have a quitclaim deed, of course there could be title issues, but at least you can record it. You can get the taxes in your name more easily. You can get notifications and you have that recognition. It's a little harder to just evict someone if they have a recorded title of some sort. But state law doesn't allow that unless there's no tax debt. So that's just one small thing I think could go a long way to give a little bit more transparency to what's in these land contracts.
Sure.
And to who is buying them.
Yeah. Yeah. Michelle, I really appreciate the call and the info. I should note that Michelle is a housing program and policy advisor for the City of Detroit and is someone who has worked for a really long time in housing advocacy here in Detroit. Josh Akers, I want to give you a chance to respond to these ideas that Michelle is throwing out there.
No, I mean, they're all good ideas. I know where they come from. It's good to hear from you, Michelle. You know, I would say that some of the things that we need to talk about at the state level is, you know, ideas around these land contracts having independent appraisals, mm-hmm. right? And try and close some of the information asymmetry that exists there. Also, making sure that titles are held free and clear by the contract seller. That way, they the contract buyer has an opportunity to successfully complete that contract. And it also doesn't allow contract sellers to take out mortgages on the property while they're under contract, which is part of what's possible given the difficulty in filing ownership claims.
Yeah, I mean, there is a sense of imbalance inherent, I think, in the process of buying a home through the land contract process, given that most buyers are not particularly savvy about, you know, these kind of things. And if you're a conventional buyer, the bank tends to be the bank and your real estate agent tend to be the kind of protection that you need from the kind of predatory behavior that you might see in some cases. When you're in a land contract, you're just kind of on your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's oftentimes, particularly these larger sellers, what they utilize. You're on your own. They ask for all of your financial information. They understand the, you know, the kind of financial condition of your household, and they price things accordingly, both how much they're going to charge you for a down payment, but as well as what your monthly payment would be, with the idea that, you know, anything from a flat tire to a medical emergency is going to put you behind in your contract payments and result in your eviction.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Michelle, really appreciate your call and that info. Let's go next to Ted Phillips. He is the executive director of the United Community Housing Coalition. Ted, what's on your mind?
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I wanted to, I missed sort of the beginning of the presentation here, but I just want to say that one thing is that rent-to-own leases are very different than land contracts.
Okay.
Rent-to-own leases and our work that we do at the Housing Coalition are almost always, when we encounter them, scams. They are set up so that it's the buyer and the seller. It looks like a land contract all the way through, except for there's language there saying if you miss one rent payment, and it is captioned as a lease usually. If you miss one rent payment, even though in 5 or 10 years or whatever, you're no longer a land contract buyer, you're a tenant. The significance is that then you can be brought to court as a tenant have to pay all your back rent or be evicted in 10 days. You have no ownership rights. You have no ability to get your name on the taxes to be able to get a homeowner rate as opposed to an investor rate. You have no right to get a poverty exemption because you're just a tenant. Whereas a land contract, even a bad land contract, gives you some ownership rights, gives you 90 to 180 days to redeem if you fall behind, and other kinds of things like that. So that's one quick thing. Other issue is that what you very often see in these land contracts is that, you know, people aren't making bad decisions. It's just that they don't have a lot of options there. And very often it'll look like it's a monthly amount that somebody can afford. It'll look like, and sometimes it's set up so that there is a balloon payment at the end. And if you do the math, if you don't do the math, you won't know that. So that's a problem. But the other issue that's it may become even more prevalent now as we see price home values increasing so much in Detroit is a common theme over the years has been, the house is bought for $500 to $1,000 during that period when, as Professor Akers had mentioned, 2008 to 2015, when there were all of these tax foreclosure sales. And so the prices actually, were 10, 15 times what the seller paid for at auction purchase. But still, they were kind of reasonable in terms of somebody being able to own a home. But as the values increase, you see more and more efforts made by land contract sellers to find reasons to forfeit the land contract, find reasons to take them to court and get an eviction. I mean, we've got a case right now where a person came to us kind of late. They bought for $50,000. They paid $66,000. And there are some sporadic payments and what have you. The seller's trying to pretend that they suddenly became a tenant and now they want it back. Why? Well, because the house is worth probably $100,000 or more in a particular neighborhood of 10. Yeah. I also wanted to catch one other point, which I understood. I thought someone said earlier that you don't become a tenant by missing a land contract payment. That's a fallacy that's kind of out there. Land contract sellers try to argue that all the time, but they're not successful when people are represented. And I'd have to put in a plug here for right to counsel, because that's really this ultimate savior for folks who are going through this and facing the very tail end, the eviction process. Yeah, that's something that's there to protect them, and we do that all the time.
Ted, I want to give you a chance to talk a little more about right to counsel. Explain to our listeners what that is. There was a debate recently over the city of Detroit's budget and whether we would actually end up funding right to counsel, which the city council has said that we absolutely should have. But talk about what right to counsel is and why it matters.
Right. City Council, the city passed an ordinance a couple of years ago that basically says that anyone that's at 200% or less of poverty would be entitled to have legal representation if they're facing an eviction, in this case, in 36th District Court. You could be facing an eviction as a tenant. You could be facing an eviction as a land contract buyer, so they're all equally covered. You do have to be at 200% or less of poverty. As a result of that, there was some funding that came through. There are four organizations. United Community Housing Coalition is the lead on it. But there's three other organizations that work with us to provide attorneys every day in eviction court, technically the real estate division of the court, but the eviction court in 36th District Court. There's attorneys there. There's a couple of spaces for offices that we have that, when you're checking in, you should, go to room 417 to see, can I qualify? Can I get help? And it's there as a protection for particularly low-income persons.
Yeah, yeah. So Ted, I also want to have you talk a little about the use of land contracts by UCHC, the organization that you lead. You find this a useful tool in some cases to be able to get people into homes that they can own. Talk about how you do it and I guess what's different about what UCHC is involved in and what we're talking about here, which is kind of bulk investors and some others who have a really bad record of success.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, our program is designed around it's not to run your organization. It's not we completely take the profit out of the whole equation. They're all zero interest land contracts, for example. The biggest program we have is one with the city of Detroit called Make It Home, which is where we, beginning in 2017, were able to work with the city to we raise money to pay the city to take properties out of tax foreclosure out after they have been foreclosed. Which usually happens in July and August of each year. And then the properties, the individuals that are living in those homes are the ones that have the right to become the owners, and they pay us back what's paid on it, 0% interest. And once they do that, they're the owner. For the first 3 years of the program, 17 through 19, the average price was $4,500. So to become a homeowner for $4,500 is pretty amazing. And these were mostly homes that were rented for $600, $700, $800 a month, and the investors simply didn't pay the taxes. We've overall, since that time, had 1,500 homes that we've been able to obtain in this fashion. Some of them are still in their land contracts with us. A few last couple of years may not have gotten into a land contract yet. They should have, but that's we're not too worried about that. But yeah, it's been a very useful tool. But you know, basically, we have the same requirements as others in terms of the taxes are their responsibility. Having their name on the taxes is their responsibility. And they benefit from that because by being the named taxpayer and low income, they can have a HOPE exemption, which eliminates the taxes. So there are, you know, a lot of advantages to that. And the last few years, the average price has been driven up just due to increased taxes, COVID backup, et cetera, to about to a little over $8,000. But even then, a typical price would be maybe $500 a month. You can pay $6,000 in a year. You can be a homeowner in, you know, a year and a half or so. So, and the reason for the payback is it's not a grant program. The money is used to be rolled over to the next year and the next year and the next year to help others in the same fashion. So, so it's worked very well. The other program we have is working with folks who are in predatory land contracts, and at that point where maybe they owe $5,000 to $10,000 to $15,000 or so, and the house has got a good value to it, and the seller is trying to find a reason to forfeit so they can take it back and sell it for 10 times that. We've been able to intervene in some of those to offer a similar kind of assistance to buy out the land contract and then have the person just pay back what we paid to buy it out.
Right. Ted, I really appreciate you calling and sharing all of this information. I mean, obviously you're someone who has been deeply involved in housing questions like these for a really long time in the city. Josh Akers, I want to have you talk about this idea of whether changes to the system that we're using, or the way that land contracts are governed, I suppose, might push them to a greater rate of success. The things that Ted Phillips was talking about, the way that UCHC approaches this, seems to be a more responsible way. Is there a way to get more of these contracts handled that way so that we do get more people who end up being owners?
Right. I just want to recognize the work of Ted and other advocates and activists out there that have pushed tooth and nail to get a lot of these programs in place, to get things like the poverty tax exemption recognized. That's gone a long way to helping homeowners. And I think the data that Ted just gave, you know, during our study period, which ended in 2015, UCHC was also running a land contract program in which they were trying to help those that were losing their homes to tax foreclosure. And that had a 54% success rate compared to, you know, what we were talking about earlier with those 5%, less than five.
Right.
So the success rate was high, but it was still, you're working with all kinds of difficulties, particularly for households that are facing, you know, tax foreclosure or having other financial difficulties. At the same time, you know, I think there are ways that we can continue to build in protections for contracts. But one of the there's a couple of primary issues in Detroit. But one is, despite the idea that there is lots of affordable housing in the city, there isn't a lot of affordable, habitable housing for people.
It's about quality.
And so we need to be very careful about locking people into places that make them sick, right? Or aren't really inhabitable conditions. So there needs to be a number of programs that are addressing not only the ability of people to become homeowners, but making sure that those places are habitable and safe for them and their children.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking about land contracts, their effect on home ownership in the city of Detroit, and their effect on the housing market. We also want to continue to hear from you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. Give us a call. Let us know if you've ever been involved in a land contract purchase, either as a seller or a buyer here in the city of Detroit. What was the outcome of that contract? Did it work the way it was supposed to? Did it break down and you either didn't end up selling the home that you were trying to sell or buying the home that you were trying to buy? 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter at WDET, hashtag Created Equal, and we can include you that way. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've joined us. Our guest is Josh Akers. He's a research manager at Mid-America Regional Council. He's also the co-author of a report titled Judged by Their Deeds, Outcomes for Properties Acquired by Contract Sellers Following the Foreclosure Crisis in Detroit. That report is about land contracts, agreements, private agreements between home sellers and buyers that circumvent the conventional mortgage process, which has been confounding here in the city of Detroit. Very difficult to get banks to write conventional mortgages in Detroit for a very long time. This report takes a look at how these land contracts have resolved themselves really over the period of 2008 to 2015. We want to hear from you as well. If you're someone who has experience with land contracts in Detroit, either as a seller or a buyer, call and tell us what that process was like and what the outcome was. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and at WDET or hashtag Created Equal. Josh, I want to start this segment talking about some other news that came out this week. Mayor Mike Duggan was talking yesterday about the growth in the value of owner-occupied homes in the city. And I want to read just a little of what he put on Twitter. He said the net value of owner-occupied homes in Detroit increased from $4.2 billion in 2014 to $8.1 billion in 2022, a 94% increase in housing wealth. In addition, Black homeowners' net housing value grew from $3.4 billion in 2014 to $6.2 billion in 2022, an 80% increase. There's no question that's good news, but I wonder how it frames the data that you're dealing with here and the narrative really around land contracts and home ownership. What do we make of those kind of contrasting dynamics?
Right. The housing market in Detroit, at least value-wise, has been on the rise for quite a while. I mean, I'm not surprised by those numbers. They mirror kind of national trends in terms of property value and rising across the country. You know, it could signal some success of programs in particular, but overall, you know, probably correlates or corresponds with where housing prices have been going nationally. At the same time, I think, as all of us know who have worked or lived in Detroit, that that kind of stability and growth is incredibly uneven.
Mm-hmm.
So there, you know, maybe maybe 10 or 12 square miles in which you see, you know, very stable neighborhoods with increasing home values. You might see pockets in other places, but there's still incredible need in a lot of neighborhoods and an incredible distress in the housing stock. And it's in those distressed neighborhoods and those that often are not the attention and focus of, you know, celebrations of rising values that Detroit residents kind of face the most difficult and predatory conditions.
Yeah, yeah. And how much of these predatory conditions that you're talking about would you attribute to land contracts? Is that something that's still, this was 2008 to 2015, it's nine mm-hmm. years later. Is this still something that in these other places in Detroit that you're talking about, is this still what is in some cases driving that instability?
So land contracts are never really a driver of the instability. They're kind of result from it mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, and they're a relatively small portion of the housing market overall. I think the look at this period in particular. My co-author and I, Eric Seymour, have been looking at this issue for nearly a decade now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We've produced, you know, at least eight different reports. This one is just capturing this period. And there's been tremendous upheaval in the investor-owner market, particularly in the last few years. But contract sellers remain quite active. They have significant volumes of property that they're operating on, and groups like Shore and UCHC see them every day in eviction court.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number. You can go to Twitter at WDET or hashtag created equal. Let's go back to the phones here. Andrew in White Lake. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, I bought a land contract house 8 years ago. I was looking around for a while. I knew I was going to pay a little more with land contracts. There were some that were not worth it at all, but I found one that was worth it, and I bought it and had it for a few years, enjoyed it, and sold it a few years later for a good amount more than I bought it for, and made some money and lived there for a few years. It was a great experience.
Wow. So the land contract agreement that you had did everything it was promising to do. It allowed you to live in the home first as a non-owner and then to buy it, and you were able to get a conventional mortgage to do that. Is that right?
I was not able to get a mortgage. That's really why I bought it as a land contract. Hmm. I lived in it. I moved out and I rented it for a little bit before I sold it. Yeah, nothing really held me back having it as a land contract, really.
So how did you come to own the house if you signed the land contract and then were not able to get the mortgage? At the end of the land contract, did you have a balloon payment that you were able to make?
There was a balloon payment. I wasn't able to make it, but the owner was willing to work with me, you know, put a little down, gave me an extension. Mm-hmm. And I probably could have kept going, but I realized I could make a profit if I wanted to sell it, so I sold it.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew, I really appreciate the call and the detail of your experience there. Josh, that reminds me to ask you, it sounds like Andrew had the ideal kind of agreement and experience, but what are some of the things that other people who are buyers ought to be looking for that would suggest a land contract is a good idea versus a predatory one? How can aspiring homeowners kind of avoid all of this?
Yeah, I mean that's quite tough. It takes some resources, right? Can you find some legal aid to review the contract for you? Can mm-hmm. you bring in an inspector or an appraiser to do these kinds of things? Mm-hmm. Very similar to what you would do if you were to buy a home in the conventional mortgage market.
Yeah,
But yeah, Andrew's experience sounds ideal, right? He had someone that was willing to work with him when they got to the end and the balloon payment wasn't there. Contract didn't prevent him from selling it to make a profit, paying
mm-hmm.
it off.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the thing that is attractive about a land contract is that it's incredibly malleable.
Yeah.
You can make it work for many situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the flip side of that is you can make it work for yourself and not for the buyer.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go next to Kim in Detroit. Kim, what's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
So, okay, so I sold a couple of houses on land contract, and when I sold them, I was actually making it the contract so the people could buy the houses. It was,
mm-hmm.
I was trying to help them get an affordable house, and in many ways, this. Yeah, they just pay increments. It was no big deal. And so at least three people have house now. But
yeah,
one more thing that was just mentioned. I want to mention something that is really important. Your guest said something about houses that are inhabitable.
Mm-hmm.
There is people are going into these houses that are not even though they're being sold, I'm not by the city, what have you. And I know someone who actually got mold in their system because they mm-hmm. went to a house that was not rehabbed properly. And they end up dying.
Wow. Wow. So Kim, I want to know more about the houses that that you've sold. Talk about why land contract was the best vehicle for those sales and how you made sure that you were not just protecting yourself in the agreement, but it sounds like you tried to make sure that the buyers were protected as well.
Yes. Well, the buyers... Actually, I just knew them all personally,
mm-hmm.
and they were living in the house. Actually, they were living in the house as renters at first when they were. I was their landlord. I hate that term, but landlord. And so I just pretty much turned the house over to them, and it just made it really easy. So when you're working together and your intentions are to help people, then it can work out.
Yeah. I really appreciate that info, Kim, and that detail about your experiences. Thanks so much for calling in. Let's go next to Mark in Sterling Heights. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Wanted to mention a number of things, and I just heard you mention to one of the previous callers. I think you used the words as a non-owner. As far as being a land contract vendee or a land contract buyer,
mm-hmm.
I'm an attorney. I do work in the city all the time. I've financed a lot of stuff in the city, including when John Lopez had reopened Twingo's back in 05 and all kinds of things. And the land contract buyer certainly is an owner. It's an equitable owner's interest. But I wanted to touch base on a number of my experiences. Over the years, I've seen the good, the bad, the litigated, right, the ugly. And I wanted to mention one of the key things is a lot of the land contracts that I've seen in the city, it's not some investor that's buying a portfolio of homes or something and trying to sell them on land contract. It's somebody that's just selling to move and is in a situation where their buyer can't qualify or doesn't is unable.
Yes.
So they go ahead and they do that. A lot of the problems come when a title company is not involved.
Yeah.
And then somebody is ready to pay it off or sell it. And they're trying to find the deed that should be sitting in escrow and they can't find it. I know appraisers, inspectors were mentioned a minute ago. A good title firm to hold a deed in escrow is absolutely critical.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of problems with not being able to find those deeds, you know, once it comes time to sell or pay it off.
Yeah, yeah. Mark, I really appreciate that perspective. I mean, having an attorney's view on this is important. Josh Akers, one thing I wanted to have you clear up is Mark is saying that there is an owner's interest mm-hmm. by the buyers. It seems to me, though, that that's got to be asserted in order for it to be respected. Is that right?
Absolutely. And oftentimes, and just clarify two things, right? In this study, what we were particularly interested in were bulk owners using land contracts.
Right.
So there are a number of small contracts out there that work for many of the reasons that both Mark and Kim have brought up.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Josh Akers, it was really great to have you here to talk about this report on land contracts in the city of Detroit. Thanks so much for joining us on Created Equal.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much, Stephen.
That'll do it for us on Created Equal today. You can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org and make sure to subscribe to our podcast where you can leave us a rating or a review. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. Our audio editing is by Connor Anderson and the music is by Sam Bobian. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University. This is WDET-FM, Detroit Public Radio, your connection to news, music, and conversation.